Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Honestly, sweaty as balls.
Okay, I should say we're recording. So, hi everyone. Sorry. I just realized, like, as you're saying that, I'm like, I should say that I did actually make good on my threat to start the recording at the top of the thing. So, hello, sweaty as balls.
Hello, everyone. I am, in fact, sweaty as balls. It is swelteringly hot here in Toronto right now. I'm lying on my bed in the dark, with a ceiling fan on.
Nice.
I don't have my AC on in the from my window box because it is too loud and would interfere with the quality of the recording. This is what I'm prepared to go through
See,
to create quality content.
whereas I just turned on my AC to, holy crap, are you fucking kidding me, cold for the past hour.
Oh,
So
yeah,
that my
see?
room would remain cool and comfortable, so that by the time I came back, I'd be like, "Brr, this is perfect."
Yeah, you were totally prepping, and
I
your prep is far superior to me. Frankly, you have the right idea. I had nothing but the wrong idea, but it's okay because we're here now.
Yay! And here we are in edition nine.
I think it's nine.
I think it's nine. Woo! So we have to have our 10th anniversary for the next podcast. So amazing. We'll call in special guests. Special guest Coco. Special guest the Evil Jewish Lesbian Landladies. Woo!
They're sort of, I mean, I don't, I, as much as I am a fan of Coco, I don't know if we can actually consider her to be a special guest. She sort of like showed up to offer her opinion on almost every one of these so far. We'll see if she decides to run in here. One of the side effects of it being hot as balls is that when you are covered in fur,
You're like, fuck that.
yeah, she just is, you know, she has the place where she lies down, and then I will walk into the room and she will look up at me and she will go, "Meh." And then that's
That's it.
all of the effort I'm going to get from her at any given time.
We're done for today.
Yeah. Which is frankly quite reasonable. I am a little bit en envious of her, as a friend put it to me this evening, her cat privilege. I am a little bit envious of her cat privilege.
Yeah, they do. They have the privilege to have you take care of all their toilet needs and pet them when you like it, when they like it, and not when they don't.
Yeah, and they get to just sort of lie around all
I've
day.
said often that I feel like, for those who believe in reincarnation or karma or any of that, you got to be some sort of super bodhisattva level motherfucker to come back as a cat.
Right?
That.
Because the other thing about it is you can lie around all day and nobody is saying to you, "Why don't you get a
No,
job?"
that is your purpose.
Right? Nobody is saying to you, "Are you okay? Is everything all right?" Of course everything all right is all right because you're a cat, and as you
Goddamn
said,
cat.
that is your purpose. That is your part to play in the great wheel that is life.
Lord have mercy, these fucking cats once again. So here we are for for this fabulous episode, and if you have not listened to our previous episodes, you should do so because they're fabulous. A and B, I also want to put in a plug here for getting us more time because right now I'm limited to half an hour, which is actually more than most people on Audioboo get for free. But since I'm an early adopter, I was grandfathered in with a half hour length, so that's great and fantastic. But if you send me an email, so click on the little envelope on my website, send me an email with your email in it, and I sign you up. For every person who joins under my auspices, I get another minute of time to talk. So that'd be really great. So if you could do that for us, that'd be wonderful.
We would certainly love to be able to talk for an hour uninterrupted.
I know, because it's sort of a drag. So there's that bit of business. And what was the other bit of business? I think that's it. So, yeah, we're coming up. I'm not trying to come up with topics because it's not as though we can't just be like, okay, so what are you going to talk about? And then suddenly some awesome topic presents itself. But
Right, and 5 episodes later.
specifically in the process of fixing and renovating my room, I turned up a bunch of books, The Complete Slave and The Master's Manual and Ties That Bind and Power Circuits and these several other books that have been written, Vi's book, To Love, Obey, to Serve, and all those really wonderful books. where people talk about master-slave relationships. And one of the things I found really interesting, and this actually dovetails also into my, not just the realization, because I've known this, but the depths of how opaque the mind of dominant and sadist people, the minds of dominant and sadistic people are to the world in general, but not just to the world, actually to people within the community. And I underscored that when Lee Harrington and I were writing Playing Well with Others, which is awesome. You should buy it on Amazon. I'll put a link there. We were at the end of the book putting together a list of blogs that we enjoyed or had read or thought would be valuable resources for kinky folks. And it was excruciating to try to come up with dominant and sadistic type people who wrote blogs and who shared their thoughts. And it's not just even along, gender lines, and it's not just along socioeconomic lines, but if you look at just who are the people who are the dominants and the owners and the masters and where are they sharing their thoughts and their processes online, or even when you look at the books that are written by kinky people, there are a few that are written by dominant and master type people that share who they are. There are some like, here's some guidelines, here's some rule books, here's some history books, but why the fuck aren't we hearing about their process? And I put the call out on Twitter recently and got a couple of people who said, oh, here's a couple of blogs, and two of them were ones with which I had not been previously familiar, but that was it.
Is it possible to put, and let's just be real that we're talking about some like crazy fake science right now, but let's just engage in some fake math
I love fake
for the purposes of conversation.
math. It's my
If
favorite.
you were to, if you were to ballpark based on, let's also preface it by saying based on your personal subjective experience, if you were to ballpark a ratio between, and let's between sort of S type bloggers and D type bloggers, is
I
it
would
like 10 to 1?
98 to 1.
Okay.
I would say even probably even lower. I would say probably for every 25 or 30 blogs you might see that are concerned with BDSM that are written by someone who self-identifies, perhaps one of them is written by a dominant person. And of those, I'd say probably about a quarter of those are written by couples, right? And
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
you have some DS couples with co-authoring blogs. And if you are sitting here listening to this going, well, she's full of shit, please show me and put links up in the comments because I would love to see them. I'm dying to know.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing about that, right? Is that the internet is a big place. So there's no way that we're going to be able to know the full sort of spectrum of blocks. Obviously, there's some that we're missing.
Right, but Google is also very mighty, and my Google foo is strong. And so, if I'm searching for blogs that are written by dominant people, or from the dominant perspective, or from the perspective of a sadist, I will find them, by dig deep by deep digging. And while I have found some, not many, and some of them date back quite a ways. You can go back to the old Castle Realm days. You can go back to, the creaky beginnings of the internet and when I first joined alt.com, and we're looking at early 90s, and there were some blogs that were written by dominant type people, but again, most of those were like, how do you train a slave, here are the rules, if the what 127 slave rules, or those sorts of things. But part of what I believe this ties into is, which is the question I wanted to put to you as a D-type person,
Oh, wait, okay.
which is what is it with the lack of transparency? And I can say in the books that I have read that have to do specifically with the master and slave mindset, it seems that most of those books, advise don't even bother trying to obtain transparency from the dominant, and the dominant has no obligation to be transparent to you. And when I say transparency, I mean emotional transparency, process transparency, spiritual, intellectual transparency. So there's this idea that as a submissive or as a slave, you are to obey. And if the dominant chooses to tell you their motives, their decisions, their reasons or rationale behind it, that is to their That is to their credit if they do so. That's very generous. But there is no idea that providing that transparency both ways is a requirement and or even desired.
Right. Okay. So that's a key. I think that's a key point that I can come back to in a second. First off, though, I think in order for me to even start to answer this question, I need to place myself in some kind of context, and that context is the relative latecomer, non-alpha, strictly introverted, process-oriented, dominant sadist. And I'm sure there's some qualifiers that I've missed there, but there's some, but there's some key things
sure,
in that.
Are you? Because that was pretty qualified.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some in there. I'm sure there have to be. Did I say Canadian, or is that just assumed? Because that's going to probably also affect some things as well. Anyway, the
that's
point
what
is
you need to write Canadian dominance. Holy
yeah, that's
shit,
right.
That
yeah,
piece.
the most polite, and probably apologetic. So that's going to affect like a. That's going to affect absolutely everything that I say in terms of an answer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm super interested in transparency, but I'm not super interested in a sort of radical honesty. Like there's a difference there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel like to a certain degree, a certain amount of opacity can be a valuable tool of control.
Mm-hmm.
So as a D-type person, as somebody who would be interested in the eroticization of control,
right.
The eroticization of sort of wielding control or inflicting control. There are inflicting is a strange choice of words, but you know what I'm saying.
Control. Ow, your control hurts.
Well, sometimes that's just the way it goes. But the point is that not every tool of control is going to work the same with every person.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a more valuable tool would be that kind of transparency,
right.
Because you may actually gain a stronger sense of control over the person that you're engaging with by having them recognize you as being a more sort of fully rounded, fallible human, as opposed to something that is iconic.
Right. And that is, I think, part of what is happening. What happens in the community here is that you have, I mean, here, you know, in the U.S., as I have observed it,
mm-hmm.
is that there's this idea that there's this dominant mindset, and there's a way that they look, and there's the clothes that they wear, and there's this misterioso kind of like, you must earn my trust, you must earn my attention, all that kind of thing. And if you do see that their feet are made of clay, and you do know how they work inside, that there's a potential that you could thereby manipulate. You know, if I know what your motives are, I can now play them to my own advantage, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that as being something that is an interesting problem. And when I've talked to either people who I've been in service to or people who I know identify as dominants, I know that there is a great deal of pressure to be that kind of strong, silent type in some way, you know, to have that idea that you have to work to obtain information and intimacy.
From the dominant type?
From the dominant type. And that that makes me really uncomfortable.
Right, because that's not – because does it make you uncomfortable because it seems like the work is then entirely one-sided?
It makes me uncomfortable because I in a situation where I now have to work to earn attention, affection, information, I'll do it. And I will keep doing it, whether or not it then becomes imbalanced in a way that's actually not healthy. And at that point, when I've seen myself doing that, where I'm like, wow, I'm pouring out everything I've got here, and what I'm getting back is very little, my first instinct is not to say, you know what, actually, this is not working. Let us pause here and figure out how to balance this out. My first thought is, I must not be doing enough. And for those of us who are self-aware enough to realize, we will try to scrabble up that hill, even if the person at the top of the hill is pouring sand underneath us the whole time. You know,
Right.
so we're never going to get closer. That dynamic is, I'm sorry, but really common. This idea that the submissive or the slave has to earn the attention of this distant, you know, ice queen or alpha wolf who, you know, lets no one near, and then suddenly now you're close, and then they will rip out your throat if you fuck up. It might be romantic for an afternoon or for a weekend, but the idea that knowing the mind of the sadist or the dominant puts them at a disadvantage is what I think is a common issue.
Right. Now I could take a step out of in terms of this. I could take a step away from the subculture that is kink and go into something that is broader society. And essentially what you that there is a romanticization, there is a romanticization of the chase
Yeah, well,
that
yeah.
exists, right? That
Word.
is part of the commonly understood and commonly practiced courtship ritual kind of everywhere.
Right.
Sorry, at least in Western society. All right. Of course, I'm going to resist that. The few moments that I fall into using absolute language, I always try to catch myself because that shit makes me crazy. So the notion of the chase, the notion of playing hard to get and the mystique that gets created by playing hard to get, like these are all things that we learn as sort of cultural norms
Right.
before we get into kink. And in a way, those cultural norms are about status and power. They're just covertly about status and power. And they're messily about status and power, right? Because the whole shit, I read a really great article recently, and I wish I could remember where it was, that was talking about this tar that was talking about the idea of playing hard to get
Yeah.
is essentially a support of rape culture.
Yeah,
Because what
I
it's
can see
saying
that.
is, keep on trying, a no isn't really a no. Right, this sort of idea. It's a fascinating goal, and it certainly makes you look at these sort of standard kinds of advice that people tend to get, that
Right.
people tend to use to understand how courtship is supposed to go. But let's just assume that most people find their way to kink culture after spending time in non-kink culture,
Right.
and where they learn about courtship is in non-kink culture. So they have this shit already in their heads that this is how courtship is supposed to go. It is, as I've said, a covert creation of a power hierarchy. You want to go even further back, you could talk about, I can't even believe that I'm about to do this right now, but I could reference Plato and the Symposium. And the Symposium was Plato's book slash lecture that was entirely about love. And inside of the symposium, Plato came up with the idea of the lover and the beloved. And that right there is an inherent power dynamic.
Right.
Plato's idea was that every single relationship, every single loving relationship falls into, and I really hope I'm getting this right, because this was like first year university philosophy class, like I was paying attention. So all of this might just be.
Yeah, I don't remember. I can't even call you on it at this point because I don't remember any
Okay.
of that shit.
Right. I'm glad that I'm not being called at it right now. However, the internet, please feel free to call me on this if I got this wrong. I trust that somebody will. Anyway, if the idea is, as I recall, that every relationship has a lover and a beloved, that is essentially a power a power dynamic, right? A really obvious power dynamic. So we learn all that shit, and then we come into kink, and it's like power is so overt. It is so obvious that sometimes, possibly, some of the ways in which we engage in power, some of the ways in which we engage in power relationships, power dynamics, power connections, or however you want to say it, it's based on that idea of it is it's been traditionally based on the idea of the majority of power and attention. Sorry, the not power and attention.
Focus.
Sure, or f what I'm saying is that stuff tends to flow mostly in one direction, and it tends to flow in terms of attention and care from the bottom up.
Yeah, it's that idea that the person who loves the most, right, has the least amount of power. Like that is the
Yes.
person who has the greatest vulnerability, is the person who cares the most. Like who can walk away from the relationship more easily, and that person is in charge. Whether or not I agree with that, it is an idea I have heard and I have thought about, you know, in my own life and as I have observed it in other relationships. And so perhaps that, and I could see that really speaking to a DS dynamic, because the idea that someone is too in love with someone who they are to do horrible things to or to order around might then develop a soft spot and then might get squishy and then might kind of fuck up, you know, just might jack up the whole dynamic, because now it's like, well, you know, I don't want to give you an order and then reinforce it, because what if you're not feeling well, or what if you're just not in a good headspace, or you know, and then there's this common fear that there will be a softening or a relinquishing of power, because one cannot have that type of strictness and power and sadism and all of the rest that comes with it with someone about whom you care deeply. And I think that probably plays into the idea that many people have that you cannot have a relationship, for example, a marriage, if you were to get married to someone, like, well, you can't marry a slave, because then you are dealing with a situation where you are now on equal footing, and how do you have a departure dynamic with the blah, blah, you know? And so that is an argument and a discussion that I have heard many times over the years, mostly from people who I've known who insist they would never, ever marry their submissive, and then, you know, of course do. Because ultimately the second you say, well, this can't happen, or well, this doesn't make sense, or well, this is the rule, the second you say that, the universe is like, you know what? I'm gonna fuck you up on that. Let me make you look stupid.
Well, and this right there is the reason that I resist speaking in absolutes. Because as soon as you start speaking in absolutes, as soon as you start to say, oh, that'll never happen, it'll happen.
I'll never win the lottery. Does it work like that?
Unfortunately, no.
God
Because then again, we sort of come back to math,
damn
and
it.
math says.
Matt says,
Math
actually,
says,
you're right, you won't.
I'm sorry, the odds of you winning the lottery are remarkably slim, but they're not never. In any case, I think that it's an interesting question about having a about the way that you're the way that a dynamic with a heavily power focused, how to put it, a heavily power focused relationship, the way that that power is engaged with or focused or pushed or received can change. I can understand that it could change based on entering a more traditional form of relationship. I feel like I'm digging myself a hole when I'm saying it, but you sort of understand what I'm getting at.
Well, but you've seen that happen. You've seen the people who are involved in MS and DS relationships, and then, you know, 5, 6, 7 years later, there is no ritual, there is no protocol. They're a couple with their issues and their ups and downs, and still in there, and still in the trenches, and still loving each other and caring. But those things fall out of alignment. Now, it could just be that that's part of that new relationship energy, and it's not something that's sustainable, and it shifts and morphs into something else. And I have seen some very long-lived DS relationships, not many, but a handful. But of those that I've seen, almost all of them will tell you that there has been a shift and an ebb and a flow.
Mm-hmm.
And of those relationships, the ones that I've seen last the longest are the ones where the master is not some infallible creature living on this pedestal. It's that they are human and they do have a degree of transparency. To me personally, I feel as though I need to know the whys behind the person I'm serving. It helps me know how to serve them better. If someone gives me a list of orders and says, here's how I want my lunch, I can do that. That's fine. But if I'm sitting there, you know, and a perfect example is like being ordered to clean a kitchen a particular way. Great. I'm cleaning this kitchen this particular way. If I fuck it up somehow and the other person's like, what? I told you to use this cleanser, not this other cleanser. And you're like, well, why? And they're like, well, you know what? I just gave you an order. Just do it. Don't question it. You can do that. But if the why is I'm allergic to this type of cleanser, or this particular cleanser has a really pleasant memory for me. My grandma used to use Pine Sol. And every Sunday when I went to my grandma's house and I walked in and I smelled Pine Sol, I knew it was going to be a wonderful weekend. That sharing, while it is very intimate, gives me the opportunity to now internalize a piece of who you are and say, okay, and bring more presence and more focus to what I'm doing, because now I give a fuck about the why. And that to me is like one of the main great awesome reasons why I'm just like, oh, dominance, just tell us your shit. Just let us hear it.
Because but again, right, that's like what you're talking about there is essentially what I was talking about before, which is transparency as a valuable tool for control, because that kind of transparency can help reinforce specificity by giving the S-type person a realization of the stakes of a thing past just the request to do a thing.
And, right.
Right. And so sometimes the stakes can be heightened by very strict protocol and like constantly reinforced, constantly reestablished protocol. Like that happens enough time and there's a recognition, there can be a recognition of, okay, this is some serious business. Like, yes, this particular cleaning product is obviously important because every time that I don't use it, it's like a week of denial, like whatever it ends up being, right? It's like, whatever is the bad punishment for the individual person, as opposed to the like, yay, punishment for each person. But that's not necessarily going to work for every, it's not going to work for every dynamic, and it's not going to work for every dominant. Now, I mean, part of that I think does have to do with the mystique that comes from opacity. That has to do more with paying attention. And on the part of the D type, on the part of the dominant, the person who is engaging in the control, or I'm going to use the word again, inflicting, because that's such a chunk of the last time. That person,
so awesome.
That it does kind of, the way in which paying attention falls on the D type is to be able to look at the individual person who is under your hand at that moment and recognize what will work for that person to achieve the desired effect. Now that's me speaking from the perspective of I'm really fascinated in like low effort, high yield.
Like, I don't think you're alone there.
Well, no, I don't think I'm alone there either, but there are some people for whom the struggle is a big deal. There are some people for whom the forcing is a big deal. Right? Like it's not enough to just have the thing done. It's like the thing has to get done and damn well you know why you're doing it.
All right. And of course we're like right now hitting half an hour. So I'm going to pause here and then we're going to do either a part two or a next part or whatever, where we will continue talking about opacity and we will see about more talk in this line. See, this is where I need a snappy wrap up. I still don't have one.
It's all right. We'll work on it. We'll work on it.
And this is where and Maybe that should be the end. I should just like find the sad trombone. Wah, 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 wah. All right, I'm gonna pause it now.